Today's gospel reading is difficult to grasp as it deals with aspects of religious practice that we as Christians don't follow and so find hard to understand. We don't have the same concept of physical holiness that Jewish people do, and particularly as they did in biblical times. The Old Testament contains many laws concerning ritual purity or ritual holiness. One had to behave in certain ways in order to be holy, to be clean, and able to worship God. As an aside, a few weeks ago we were looking at David and Bathsheba. When Bathsheba was bathing, she may have been having a ritual bath after her monthly period, as that's commanded in the law. So some people think she was on the roof trying to attract David's attention. She may simply have been doing the religious obligations of a good Jewish woman to become ritually clean after her monthly cycle. We don't think about holiness and cleanliness in quite the same way. We do see aspects of this in Islam, where before prayer, one must wash hands, feet, arms, ankles, and mouth. In Christianity, we don't undertake ritual washing before prayer, but the nearest we have to it is to bless oneself with holy water before going into a Catholic church. A constant refrain in the book of Leviticus, where much of the Jewish law is written, is, "You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy." And holiness was understood to be a moral thing outworked in physical actions. Today's passage starts with criticism from the Pharisees about how Jesus' disciples were eating without washing their hands in a ritual way. This is not like your mum would tell you off when you were little for not washing your hands before you had your tea. There is no Jewish law insisting that hands were ritually washed before eating, but there is a requirement that priests should ritually wash before ministering at the altar. The Pharisees took seriously a line from Exodus where God tells the Jewish people that they are to be a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. So they argued that all Jews should be as holy as the priests, and therefore all should ritually wash before eating. This type of reasoning was about trying to help people understand the closeness of God and the obligations people have to worship God and to honour God in their daily life. It wasn't a bad thing, but it did raise into rules things which weren't actually in the Jewish law. The author of the Gospel exaggerates when he says that all the Jews followed this. Jesus wouldn't have been alone in rejecting this teaching, but he was, however, prominent. So the Pharisees wanted to counter his example, to bring him down. At first glance, Jesus' response seems to be trying to move people away from punctilious observances of laws and move them towards living better ethics. The passage is critical of those religious types who use their faith to absolve them from any compulsion to live with compassion. The example in the passage of people dedicating their goods to God, but still holding on to them as a way of getting out of looking after aged parents, is a good example of faith being used to avoid ethical duties. It's an easy thing the religious people to do. I'm sure as you're all good, holy people, you wouldn't have watched the Sacha Baron Cohen film Borat, because that's just a dreadful film. In case you haven't watched it, in the film, Sacha Baron Cohen stages himself, is a British Jewish guy. He staged himself as a diplomat from one of the former Soviet republics in Asia. And he's in America, and the film gently pokes fun at various American bits of culture. In one of the more disturbing things he does, he goes to sleep dressed as a homeless man on church steps on a Saturday night, and then deliberately stays asleep on a Sunday morning to see what they do. And he sleeps on the central doors, so they step over him. Quietly, so as not to wake him up, but they just ignore it. So you see all these people going into this vast American megachurch, stepping over him, and eventually he sort of sits up, but they still sort of ignore him. And it's unfair, because they didn't know what to do. But it's quite a ringing indictment of how religious people can behave. Another American series, one of my favourites, was a drama show called Desperate Housewives. And in one of the early series, there's a teenager who's practicing a song she's going to sing at church, and she keeps getting it wrong. And her mum says, well, don't worry, it's church, they're good people, they won't mind. Her neighbour's there. Her neighbour is a lady with a reputation, a lady with a past. And she says, it's church, kid, get it right or they'll criticise. Again, disturbing humour, but we sort of know what the lady with the past is on about. We all know people who are self-righteous, who use religion to hide their judgmentalism. And the abuse scandals make us realise that outward sanctity may not be indicative of someone being close to God. When we live in ways which don't reveal the values we say we believe in, we're seen as hypocrites. We're quick to condemn politicians who do this. The furore this week over the allegations against Mr. Salmond have been shocking, and if proved, will trash his reputation. Love him or loathe him, he's been a very successful politician who took his party from obscurity to being the majority party in Scotland and came within a whisker of winning a referendum many people thought would never happen. He's fighting for his political life now, as his reputation is on the line, and people will call him a hypocrite if the allegations are proved. Over the last month, a Catholic archbishop has been convicted in Australia of covering up abuse and has been made to resign his ministry. The former Cardinal Archbishop of Washington, probably the most senior Catholic cleric in the United States, has been made to resign from the College of Cardinals as he's emerged he's been abusing men and boys for years. Happily, we don't live in that type of spotlight. We don't live with the scrutiny that Mr. Salmond and other political and religious leaders do. I wonder how our lives would stack up if the press were doing some digging about us. How many of us wouldn't be pulled up short if challenged about the way we live and whether it meets the values we say we believe in? It's much easier to look pious than to live authentically, which is the point Jesus was making. I think there are at least three ways we can avoid the trap of hypocrisy. First, don't judge, but seek to understand. It's easy to judge. I get very angry when I read of bishops, archbishops, and cardinals who have behaved disgracefully. It's hard to understand a mindset that protects the institution rather than the vulnerable. However, I realise how easy it is to get pulled into that, to not want to expose a church one loves to outside scrutiny, to convince oneself it's better to deal with things quietly, that we want to avoid hurt to good people. It's easy to get pulled in. Understanding doesn't mean agreeing, but it can stem our temptation to judge. Second, as the saying goes, remember that there by the grace of God go we. We read a scandal and hypocrisy and feel outraged, but forget it will be very easy for us to be caught out. People in the cafe this week were telling Ian how much better things are now in Scotland, now that sectarianism isn't so much a part of life. But it wasn't that long ago when gentle questions about which school you went to were really about something else, because not many members of the Church of Scotland went to a school called Our Lady Help of Christians. So it was a way of finding out your religion, and how finding out your religion could then lead into discrimination. It's not that long ago when people who had children out of wedlock were shamed. We're all tempted to have a nice juicy gossip, but hate it if we're the subject of the gossip. Different life choices, different circumstances could mean any of us could easily have been undone, as so many of the powerful are. The difference is our undoing isn't in the public gaze. Remembering that keeps us humble. And finally, we need to practice what we preach. People may be turned off by the church, but aren't turned off by Jesus. I've been doing some research over these films we're going to be watching over the next 4 weeks, And intriguingly, the daughter of one of the Monty Python writers was on the radio last week talking about Life of Brian. And when Monty Python first thought about making this film, The Life of Brian, it was originally going to be a satire of Jesus's life. And they hadn't read the Gospels since they were school kids, so they went and read the Gospels. And when they finished, they decided they couldn't satirize Jesus. But what he said was too powerful and too astoundingly obvious and too good. So instead, the film satirizes religion. And the few places where Jesus is in the film, he's dealt with incredibly respectfully. What's lampooned is the way religious people behave appallingly. People are turned off by the church, not by Jesus. And they're turned off by the church because we don't always practice what we preach. I had a lot of respect a few years ago for Cardinal Winning up here, who made money and resources available to women who felt they had no alternative but to have an abortion. The media elite was scandalized and felt he was paying women to make a certain choice. I felt instead of condemning women who had abortions, he was putting his money where his mouth was so that women felt they had more of a choice. That seemed to me to be a good thing. In our everyday lives, we need to make sure what we say we believe, we actually live. And that's a huge challenge. Years ago, Jesus condemned the religious to their hypocrisy. We can avoid the traps of religion by refusing to judge, remaining humble, and practicing what we preach. Will you pray with me? Almighty God, in Jesus Christ, you've shown us the truth of your commandments. Give us sincere hearts that we may serve you with joy, obey you with love, and manifest your wisdom to the world.